It's time for Steve Gallimore Live. For the next hour, we'll examine the world around us through news, science, and philosophy. Then we'll open up God's Word to put it all into perspective. Now here's your host, Steve Gallimore.
Great to be with you today. There is a brand new U.S. news, and the front lead story on that is science and the soul. And as you probably are well aware, it's, as we mentioned last Wednesday about the Time magazine article, this also is one that I'm sure that you realize that we were going to deal with. Well, you may not even have this yet because it hasn't hit the newsstands, but science and the soul. Think about that for just a moment. What does science have to do with the soul, and vice versa? We're going to look at that from the standpoint of the biology of all of it. We also are going to look at it from the standpoint of what the Bible has to say. Get ready to give us a call today. This is going to be a great program. You will not want to miss the opportunity to call in. It is 800-775-4673. 800-775 and the word HOPE, H-O-P-E. We have a CD by Jamie George, and as you know, he is a world-class violinist. Jamie was in this week, and he gave us a number of CDs to pass along to you. And so we're going to do that once again today. If you'd like a Jamie George CD on the violin, you will not find a better violinist, I don't think, anywhere that relates to Christian music. Just a tremendous talent. And the number that you can call is 800-775-4673. We'll be happy to send that to you free of charge as our gift of appreciation when you join us on the air. So plan on giving us a call, not only to get the CD, but to join our program today. This is going to be a very, very good one. We are touching on some extremely important issues for Christianity, and so we would like to hear your opinions and your ideas and also have your questions. I have a psychiatrist that's in the studio with me, and he will be able to help us. He knows a lot about the soul and the mind and all those kinds of things, and so we're going to speak with him today. But our number, 800-775-HOPE, you can go to the website and www.lifetalk.net, and you can take the opinion poll and find all the great things that we have there on the website. Well, back to the cover story on the U.S. News and World Report magazine, and is there room for the soul? That is a question that they have raised. Is there room for the soul? The story reports on the cutting-edge scientific studies of human consciousness, and it looks at how some of these ideas interface with traditional religious beliefs. Some current theories look at human decision-making as primarily determined by evolutionary factors, like the need for survival, to find food, a mate, et cetera, et cetera. And we're going to look at that. We're going to talk about that today. The article, if you get this and read it, if you haven't read it yet, it's a very long article for a news article, and is also, I found it to be kind of laborious reading, but there is a lot of information there. I'm not sure that it's put together in the way that I would come to by way of conclusions, but there is a lot of information there. The issue of the soul, of course, is something that has plagued people for a long, long time. What is the human soul? And as we raised the issue a couple days ago, as we related to the Time magazine article, what is it that makes us human? Well, most people respond, the difference between a human and a chimp, for instance, or any of the other created creatures that we have in this world, the major difference is that there is a human soul. In fact, on Wednesday, one of our callers called in and said that was the main difference. And I think that probably has been where many people have been down through the years. That is what distinguishes us from the other animals in the world. Well, according to this article in U.S. News and World Report, they focus on that particular issue and say, okay, well, maybe it is not really a soul that's important. Maybe it is just part of the plain old biological process, and we're not that much different from the other animals. Well, once again, we're going to dig into this, and we're going to talk about it. We also want to see what the Bible has to say, because the issue of the immortality of the soul, the issue of the division between body and spirit, is an issue that has also been around around down through the Christian centuries. It is not something that was part of Hebrew thinking by way of the division. There was more of a unity of thought, but we want to come to that. We'll talk about that in just a minute, too, and how we bring all of that together. Well, we'd like to hear from you. Our number is 800-775-4673, and on the program today, we're going to dig into this article. We're going to go through a number of the issues that are raised there, and we also, as I just mentioned, are going to talk about some of the scriptural issues. There are so many things that we could discuss as it relates to this article, and we could spend a long time, but we'll try to stay focused today on a narrow view of this topic, because we could get branched off and into a lot of different things. But I know we're going to have an interesting time with this today, and so we'd like to hear from you and your comments and your ideas. As I mentioned just a moment ago, our guest today is Dr. Tim Jennings. He is a psychiatrist, an author, seminar presenter, and a consultant. He's here in the studio with me, and Dr. Jennings, great to have you back with me again.
Great to be with you.
Well, we're getting started earlier. Usually we wait till after the first break, but I just wanted to give some highlights today without getting into the particulars of the article, because I know we're going to do that as we go through the program. But let me just ask you for a general overview here before we go to break, just kind of a quick general overview of your impression of this Time magazine article.
I thought it did a good job of presenting various different perspectives, both biological, some spiritual, some religious. It didn't really seem to come down on any side of it. It was trying to do a job of a reporter and reporting the different views out there. And I think it was leaving the reader open to try to come to their own conclusion.
All right. Well, in this U.S. News and World Report article, as I just mentioned, and as Dr. Jennings just referred to, there are a lot of issues that are raised, and you have a lot of the issues from history by way of the Greek philosophers. And, you know, we could spend more than one whole program just talking about the Greek philosophers and their impact on Christianity and Christian thinking.
And it was huge.
It was very, very large, and how that actually entered in coming into the Christian church. About half the writings of the Apostle Paul are there in the New Testament just because of the Greek philosophers, Plato, Aristotle, and so forth, and the influence that they had on the society of his day, and then the influence that they had on the growing new little Christian church that had just gotten started there. Well, more in just a minute, and as I mentioned, we are going to look at the details of this issue that we've raised with you. So stay with us, a lot more to come, and we would love to hear from you, 800-775-4673. If you'd like to join us on the air, feel free to do that. In fact, we'd be really happy to have you give us a call, 800-775-4673. We're talking about science and the soul.
Your thoughts and comments are welcome at 800-775-4673.
Louis, do you think I'm attractive?
Oh, Marie Antoinette, my bride. Yeah. You are vivacious and beautiful.
You gotta be careful, because sometimes these words get translated different ways.
But one small thing. Marie, you must pay attention to the financial crisis facing the kingdom.
Oh, yeah, that.
Marie, the peasants are revolting.
I agree.
They have no bread to eat.
Well, let them eat cake.
My queen, if you don't pay attention to our money situation, we shall be ruined.
Failing to heed the warning signs of financial trouble can lead to disaster. Ignoring your financial problems won't make them go away. It'll only make them worse.
Marie, my sweet, the peasants are demonstrating in the streets.
That?
I think you're really sticking our necks out.
Oh, Louis, what can happen?
I don't have
for
it on
a free
computer.
Online budget guide that can help you face up to your financial situation, visit crown.org. A Money Minute from Crown Financial Ministries.
Steve Gallimore back with you. We're talking today about science and the soul. We are keying off of a article in the current issue of U.S. News and World Report entitled that, Science and the Soul. It is subtitled, New Research is Challenging Our Most Cherished Ideas of Self and the Human Spirit. I'm not so sure that's true, but that's the conclusion that they came to on the cover of their magazine. My guest is Dr. Tim Jennings, a psychiatrist and also author, seminar presenter. He has a brand new book that's coming out. It's not off the press yet, but it's going there soon. And when he gets that published, we'll let you know about it. But it's going to be a really, really great book. He gave me a preliminary copy of it, and I can tell you it's really good, and we'll let you know about that later on. But Dr. Jennings, this article, as we've already indicated, raises so many questions for a Christian. And any Christian that reads that article and doesn't have like a zillion questions about it really probably has not come to grips with some of the fundamental principles of the Bible. But let's try to tackle some of the biology of this first of all. And I know that as you read through the article, you noticed a number of things as it relates to the evolutionary issues and the biology of this. Just start tackling some of those.
All right, let's talk about it. First off, most of the scientists that they talk about in this article, or who they quoted in this article, come at this not with an open mind looking at what evidence they discover to see which way it leads, but they come at it with the presumption that we've evolved from a lower life form, and that's already a given, and then all the data is interpreted within the light of that presumed fact. And that really clouds how they draw their conclusions about human consciousness, because then they interpret the data they see as some function of the survival of the fittest function, rather than actually looking to see if there's some other process going on. They also identified within here two classes of people as on the extremes. One they called the hardcore religious fundamentalist, and the other they called the hardcore scientific fundamentalist. What I understand those to be is the hardcore religious fundamentalists are those who believe there's some type of an intelligent part of your thinking being that can live outside of your biologic being, called a spirit that floats around and still has consciousness and thinks and makes choices, but is not connected in any way to your biologic being. That would be the hardcore religious fundamentalist. And the scientific hardcore fundamentalist would be those who say that there's nothing going on in your mind more than a process of biochemical reactions, and we are nothing more than those reactions. There's no free will choice, no planned pre-processed thinking, no conscience, no moral governance, just simply where the results of a bunch of biological processes.
So coming to that end of the spectrum, then basically, if I understand what you're saying, is that those individuals would simply say that there is absolutely no difference between a person and a chimp, or a dog or a cat or any other created thing, as it relates to the functioning of the mind at a higher level, other than, you know, greater intelligence. But there's nothing there except just a chance biological processes that took place, and there's nothing there that relates in a special way to God, that kind of thing.
Oh, they would absolutely say that. They would actually even go on to say that these biologic processes in our brain that is different than the lower animals are simply that we have become more sophisticated in the biologic processes to allow us to adapt more effectively to our environment, to allow us to kill off other things that would threaten us more easily so that we can survive and other things won't survive. So the biologic processes are all driven towards survival, and the way that works is by killing everything that would interfere with your survival.
All right. So now you're a psychiatrist, so I know that you can certainly answer this. If a person does some kind of deviant behavior and gets involved in crime or whatever, then that person, from that perspective, really would not be morally responsible, because there's no such thing as absolute morals. There's no such thing as a guiding compass for the human race to relate to. And you're just pre-programmed. That's who you are, and that's what you do. End of story.
With some of these theories in there that would actually support what you just said. Some of these theories are very reductionistic, saying that your identity, your free will, your likes, your dislikes, your behaviors are nothing but a, quote, vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules. And so you aren't actually planning anything. In fact, consciousness is an illusion that allows us to make sense of processes that are going on that are actually making our decisions for us.
All right. Well, of course, that doesn't square with what the Bible has to say. We know that.
It doesn't square with common sense either, because if you follow that through, then if these people who would argue this would say, well, the terrorists who are committing acts of terror, they didn't really plan, they didn't plot. It was actually some biological, chemical process through a set of neural circuits in their brain that they had no choice over that drove them to do this. The pedophile who exploits kids doesn't make a free will choice to do that. He's just programmed to do that, and so forth and so on.
All right. Now, according to these guys in this article, what is the human soul?
you know, I don't know that they ever really identified clearly what their thoughts on the human soul is. I think that they're basically saying that they're still searching for answers, but their belief is going to be that it'll be nothing more than a few sets of genes that they'll be able to identify, a set of biochemical processes, a few key neural circuits, but they're still looking for a biological reductionistic explanation for the soul.
Well, in fact, they were saying that there is the possibility. In fact, I was reading in, this is actually a different article. This one, it traces the same issue, but this one is actually from the magazine Science. And they were talking about taking the this soul DNA, if you will, for better terminology, and from a human being, once they identify this soul DNA, and placing this in a chimp DNA and having now a chimp with a soul.
Yeah. And what, you know, who knows whether they're going to be able to transfer DNA that would allow a chimp to have intelligence. I don't know whether they will be able to do that or not. I know that there's all types of experiments going on where they are doing experiments of transferring DNA from one animal species to another. There was a research done recently in Iowa, I believe, where they have pigs now with human blood because they want to do research on the pigs with human blood, because the more human-like they are, the more accurate their research will be when they translate that back into medical technologies for human beings. And so there's lots of research going on how to bring human genes into various animal species and vice versa.
Well, you know, I said a few minutes ago that there's so many different places that we could go with this program, and we have to keep our focus narrow. But what you just brought up, that needed to be said. But, you know, I thought to myself, we could branch off into that, the whole issue of the, you know, of blending human parts, for the lack of a better term at this moment, together with other animal parts, of course, is an issue. We'll be back in just a minute. Stay tuned. We have a lot more to come. 800-775-HOPE. We'd love to hear from you.
You can join the conversation now by calling 800-775-4673. Hurricanes, floods, and tornadoes. Whenever and wherever disaster strikes, Adventist Community Services Disaster Response is committed to helping communities in crisis. For more than 100 years, the Seventh-day Adventist Church has provided emergency relief through the Adventist Community Services Disaster Response. Working in over 200 cities across North America, ACS Disaster Response operates in partnership with the Federal Emergency Management Agency and is a member of the National Voluntary Organizations active in disasters. ACS Disaster Response helps disaster victims through emergency distribution of non-perishable food, clothing, and other necessary supplies. For more information about an ACS Disaster Response Center near you, or to donate, please visit www.communityservices.org or call 877-ACS-2702.
Steve Gallimore back with you. We are talking about science and the soul. And if you would like to join our discussion, just pick up the phone and give us a call, 800-775-4673. As we mentioned earlier in the program, the current issue of U.S. News and World Report has their lead cover story, Science and the Soul. And it's an article about finding the science behind the human soul. And the subtitle to that is New Research is Challenging Our Most Cherished Ideas of Self and the Human Spirit. Well, we have a lot to talk about today, and my guest is Dr. Tim Jennings. He is a psychiatrist, and he is an author, lecturer, does a whole lot of things. And Tim, we're having a good discussion about this. Let's get back, if we could, to the article and some of the science of the article. Some of the issues, at least, that are raised from the scientific standpoint. You were talking about the issue, one thing that is in here, about language. And this is one thing we know that does distinguish us from the other animals. Not that animals don't communicate. We know that chimps, for instance, communicate. They do it maybe with some kind of rudimentary sign language, this kind of thing. But no one else communicates, or no other species communicates the way we do.
Right.
We are equipped biologically for that. But what are some other issues related to it?
Well, this article is very interesting because, as I said earlier, the scientists come at this with the presupposition that we evolved. And when they get to the issue of language, it really throws everything into a kilter for them. And they say things like, quote, we evolved structures that invented language, unquote. Now, if you understand how the brain works, when a baby is born, it has approximately 200 billion neurons. Within the first several years of life, those neurons are pruned back to form a neural network of about 100 billion. So we lose about 50% of our neurons are lost within the first few years of life. The way I understand that, or the way I like to conceptualize that, is imagine Michelangelo's block of marble before he starts working on it. And then he starts working on it, and you end up with this beautiful masterpiece, but you have less marble. The brain comes prepared to adapt itself to the stimulation and experiences that the child experiences through their development. If a child is put in a situation where they have no language spoken to them for the first several years of life, 5-6 years of life, and then someone starts speaking language, that child will always have permanent language deficits because the neurons responsible for language were deleted in the first several years of life because they weren't being used. What does that mean? This guy's saying that our brain evolved neurons to develop a language, but the way the brain actually works is if you actually don't start speaking, those neurons are deleted from the brain, and it's actually evidence that his theory is wrong.
All right. So what does that have to do with the human soul?
Well, I think it has to do with the human soul because it's evidence that, no, we can evolve over time to create neurons that can create a language, that we were created ready to receive a language, and that required a master designer.
Right. Good point. And I think well stated. And there probably are many other examples that we could look at of similar nature on these kinds of things where we are created in a certain way to relate to God, etc. When we don't use some of these abilities that we have as humans that distinguish us from the animals, as you've indicated, then we end up losing those. And so it's how does an animal that's not using those gain them?
Exactly right. You can't. You can't just evolve into a language. It doesn't work that way. The other thing was interesting in here, if you notice, they also talked about they're working on making machines with consciousness. They're working on trying to get artificial intelligence. And they're talking about all the research, all the planning, all the working, all the programming. Well, why don't they just go ahead and throw a bunch of neural circuits in a room with an explosion and let it kind of, you know, develop itself over time? No, they're designing a machine for this, just like you and I were designed to have these skills and abilities.
Let me throw this out as part of our discussion. And I don't want any of you to think today that I have gone totally weird off into some kind of, science, pseudoscience. But in any case, let me pose this question. What is the difference between a human brain and a computer? A computer has electronic impulses that drive its behavior.
Yes.
Human beings have electronic impulses that drive their behavior. What's the difference?
Well, the human brain is, in some ways, there's a lot of analogies. We have hardware, the physical brain tissue. The computer has a hard drive, physical materials you can touch. We have software, programming that we learn, our language that we're talking about right now. You and I have an English software package that was uploaded after we were born. If I was raised or you were raised in France, we have French software package that was uploaded. As our computers have software. You and I have an energy source that provides energy to run this thing, just as the computer is an energy source. But our brains are much, much more sophisticated, pliable, elastic. Our brains can adapt themselves to based on the information demands we placed upon it. What you think, what you watch, the choices you make, the behaviors you engage in will cause neural circuits to develop, to branch out, to make new connections. New neurons are formed to fulfill the demands placed upon your brain. A regular computer can't do anything like that. Also, we can have creative thought, that we can sit back, we can contemplate, and we can create ideas and concepts that are novel and new. A computer can only process information that has been given.
Once again, Tim, this is scientific fiction stuff, but everyone knows, you know, that this kind of thing is out there. There comes the day when humans are able to create a computer that is so sophisticated, it's just like them. What's false about that?
Well, what's false is there's no freedom of will. And without freedom of will, there's no love. And the key to the running of the whole universe is God is love. God is other-centered giving freely, voluntarily, totally. And with a computer program, if you could actually take nanochips, inject into your kids, they go to their brain and lodge in their brain, and you could program your children to behave perfectly and come tell you they love you 3 times a day, we all recognize immediately something's missing there. That is not love. Love requires freedom of will, and we have free sentient will to make choices for good or choices for evil. Machines can't do that.
We obviously have that ability to choose for God or to reject Him, which certainly distinguishes us from computers or the other creatures that God has made. I think there's no question about that. Well, I hear the music playing. I was about ready to add to that discussion. We'll do it after break, but we have to go to break right now. Our number is 800-775-4673. The human soul, what is it? What is the science behind trying to discover the human soul? We're going to talk about all those things. If you'd like to become part of our discussion, pick up the phone, give us a call, 800-775 and the word hope, H-O-P-E. Steve Gallimore back with you. We are talking today about the human soul, and we are keying off the article in the current issue of U.S. News and World Report, Science and the Soul. And they talk about the effort to look at the human soul from the scientific standpoint. They go back through history and also trace some of the philosophical elements that have been in play for a long, long time, back even under the Greek philosophers. So it's an interesting article. Probably some of the premises we're not going to agree with today. But in any case, it does raise some interesting issues that I think we need to come to grips with. What is the human soul? What makes us different from all the other animals that God created? Our number is 800-775-4673. If you'd like to join us on the air, we have a Jamie George CD. We'll be happy to send that out to you free of charge. It's our way of saying thank you for being with us on the air and being part of the program. My guest today is Dr. Tim Jennings, who is a psychiatrist, and so he knows a lot about the mind, and we're having a wonderful discussion as we talk about this issue, science and the human soul. We're going right now to British Columbia, and we're going to talk to Nadine. Nadine, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good. Great to hear from you.
Concerning what Dr. Jennings said about what we would have to conclude if our consciousness was all biological, and I...
Hello, Nadine, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you were breaking up. If you could be kind enough to repeat that, please.
Okay. Concerning what Dr. Jennings said about that if our consciousness was all biological, that we would have to come to the conclusion that terrorists and criminals have no responsibility for their acts because it would be all biological.
Yes.
I hope this question's relevant, but I was wondering, in the case of depression, where, they say that people, when they're depressed, it's hard for them to they're not motivated, and they need all this extra help. And I was just wondering, can a depressed person be held accountable or responsible for his actions if his chemistry isn't right? And how much he can be held responsible for, and why would he be responsible for that or not responsible for that? I'm just wondering, where is the line?
Right. A very good question, Nadine. Your question, I think, also relates to the issue of sin in the world. We know that we are not the same way that God created Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. The process of sin has taken its toll in this world. How does that relate to the human soul, to human consciousness and awareness of God, the difference between knowing how to do good and knowing what is evil? Tim, to me, I know that is a question that's been asked 10,000 times. It's a good question, though.
Well, your question kind of even blurted a little further, because I hear now the moral side of good and evil, and her side about the legal side of being held responsible for the laws of the land and
right.
one's conduct.
Right.
And I don't necessarily see those.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe I should make it a little clearer. When a person is depressed and they don't, and they, you just won't care. It's almost like neglect, no response. They don't take, they're not being responsible. They're not motivated. And then they get frustrated, and then they start to do things like become violent and stuff out of frustration and stuff. That's exactly what I'm trying to narrow it down to what I'm asking. In that framework, where is he responsible for his actions? How much can he do? How much can a person do? Can they still make good decisions? Are they just refusing to? And does depression become an excuse? Or are they actually not able? Are they actually in a downward spiral and they just cannot stop themselves?
Nadine, it is a good question. We could even stretch this a little farther. It even goes to speak something of the judgment of God. And how does God hold people responsible? I don't know that we can get into all of that today, because that really gets us away from our topic a little bit. But let's address that to some degree, Tim.
Well, she brings up an excellent point, and the honest answer is, of course, it depends on each individual person and each individual situation. There is no hard and fast cookie-cutter rule that you can say will apply and give the clear-cut answer for every person. Are there cases where a person has an alteration in brain function such that they lose the ability to be able to discern what's happening around them accurately, and therefore lose the ability to process information truthfully and come to intelligent and reasonable decisions? Absolutely. Let's take the obvious case of not somebody with just depression, but somebody with, say, Alzheimer's dementia in late stages. They don't even know who they are or anything else is around them. They've lost the ability to be responsible, to make judgments, to make decisions, and they wouldn't be held accountable. So certainly there can be brain illnesses, and within the field, within the disease of depression itself, the illness depression, there's a wide continuum of severity. On the most extreme severe state, the brain is actually altered in its functioning to the point that people can have impairments in reality testing, their information processing is altered, and they are impaired in their judgments and decisions. And if you look at various physical tests that we can do, like PET scanning, when people have severe depression, brain glucose metabolism is altered, electrical activity is altered, neurogenesis is altered, protein production is altered, neurons begin dying in the brain. It's a very serious illness. And so, yes, if it's on the severe end of depression, people can have alterations that alter their ability to function normally and even be responsible for the decisions. But there's many people with depression who also meet criteria for depression who haven't gotten that severe and still can be held responsible for their decisions because they haven't lost touch with reality.
Yeah, and I think, Nadine, when we talk about responsibility, as Dr. Jennings indicated earlier, you know, there's the legal responsibility. And, of course, there are, you know, whole huge sets of laws out there that deal with mental illness and who's held responsible and who's not held responsible because of mental illness. But when we come to the scripture and we think about God and the judgment, how will God hold people responsible? Are there those that whose mental function has been altered to a certain extent so God will not hold them responsible? I think, for instance, of an individual that was going through, an older individual was going through dementia. He was a person that had served his whole life, served the Lord faithfully in every aspect. But when he was going through that experience late in life, he embarrassed his son, who was so faithful to the Lord. He'd go outside, just start screaming and cussing and, you know, saying all kinds of profanity. But was that man held responsible for that? Well, I mean, I certainly didn't hold him responsible for it. Neither did his son. And, you know, some of these things we have to entrust God's judgment to ultimately. So when we talk about responsibility, you know, are we talking about the, you know, the legal responsibility? Are we talking about God? Are we talking about just our own moral judgment that we make today?
What I tell a lot of my patients who are concerned about this, God's concern is one of character, not one of intelligence or even one of being able to be reasonable at all times as far as being able to be in touch with reality. A schizophrenic person who may hear voices that aren't there, but is an honest, faithful, loving, kind person, God looks at the character, not whether their auditory processors are processing properly.
Right. Well, Nadine, I hope that we've answered your question. We haven't let you get back into the conversation. If you'd like to stay on through break, feel free to do that. We have a break coming up. We'd love to hear from any of you today about the topic of the day, science and the soul. Our number is 800-775-4673, 800-775-HOPE. Give us a call. We'll be happy to speak with you.
Do you have a question for today's show? Call 800-775-4673.
If you're blessed by what you're hearing on this radio station and you want more, LifeTalk Radio introduces the Hope Channel, a powerful new television network with an exciting, inspirational program lineup relevant to today's culture. Join us in a new documentary series as we retrace Paul's epic journeys across Asia Minor. Enjoy biographies that will take you through the lives of great Christian leaders. Inspirational Bible studies will lead you to a better understanding of God's Word. And our cutting-edge health and cooking programs will help you enjoy a full and happy lifestyle. To start enjoying Hope Channel's programming right away, contact your cable or satellite provider today and let them know you want the Hope Channel. For more information, visit us online at www.hopetv.org. That's www.hopetv.org.
It's Steve Gallimore back with you. We're talking today about science and the soul. We'd like to hear from you. What are your opinions and your ideas? What is the human soul? What makes us different from the animals? We asked you that question the other day, but I'd like to ask that again. If you'd like to call in and give your opinion, we'd like to hear from you. What is it that really makes us separate from the other animals in the world? And what we have often termed, I'm talking about humanity in general now, has often termed the human soul. And we want to discuss that somewhat too. What is the human soul? But what is it that actually makes us different? What is it about the soul that makes us different? Give us a call, 800-775-4673. Tim, let's come back to, we need to come to the science again, but let's talk about the Bible for just a minute. The Bible, of course, takes the view that we are a unity. By way of who we are. Oftentimes, there has been an effort to try to break up the human person into various components. When we go back to the Greek philosophers, we go back to Plato in particular. Plato, of course, decided that he wanted to divide the human spirit. I'm saying these in simple terms. Some of these philosophical concepts of these Greek philosophers are a lot deeper than what they seem on the surface. But basically, it was the premise that the material world was bad and evil. In fact, Plato actually even came to the place where he wondered if it existed at all, but certainly he took the position that it was bad and evil. There was something that was ideal out there, and they used various terminologies to explain that, but it was separate from the material world and existence. And this philosophy, of course, came into the Christian church. The Apostle Paul had to fight about it, and as we came down through Christian centuries, many in the Christian church actually developed the philosophy of a soul that was separate from the person themselves. Because, once again, the concept that physical matter was dirty, there was something bad about it, there was something wrong with it, that became a Christian concept. Out of that, you have the development of the monasteries. You have the development of the theory, the philosophy of purgatory. So that the soul can be cleansed before it goes on into paradise. And a lot of those things, really from my standpoint, when I look at the Bible, I would have to say those are heretical teachings because they don't correspond with the Bible. But yet they became really part of the teaching of the Christian church.
Most Christians, I think, would be shocked to know that one of the things they hold sacred doesn't come from God, doesn't come from the Bible prophets, doesn't come from Jesus. It comes from Plato.
Right.
That they are passing on basically paganism in Christianity by teaching this immortal, ethereal, mystical entity with consciousness that survives outside the physical body. One of the things this article that we were talking about today did that I thought was good is it had the following quote. It said, the Christian concept of the soul should be relieved of its Cartesian and Platonic overlays. The immortality of the soul is so often talked about that it is easy to miss that the Jewish view did not support it. Furthermore, the original Christian view was not the immortality of the soul, but the resurrection of the body. And everybody pulls out their Bible and looks, the whole New Testament church was concerned that their loved ones were dying and that they wouldn't be there when Christ comes. And the whole emphasis was, no, there will be a resurrection of the body. And the point about the soul that I would like to make is when God breathed into Adam, he formed him out of the dust of the ground, breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and he became then a living soul. It is the entire being. And without a physical brain, there is no worship.
Right.
There is no love. There is no thought. There is no... And every organ system of the body is designed for one purpose, to serve the brain. The lungs breathe to oxygenate the brain. The heart beats to give blood and energy to the brain. The digestive system works to provide energy to the brain. And if you don't have a brain and your heart and lungs still beat, they beat and breathe without purpose because their only purpose is to serve the brain.
Well, you know, I think, Tim, this division between the body and the spirit, or the body and the soul, one place where it becomes so evident of the difference between thought that has been currently available down through the Christian centuries and what the Bible actually has to say is the well-accepted idea that somehow the spirits are up there, you know, and the traditional thinking, you know, playing harps and all this kind of thing, floating around on the clouds. And, I mean, all of us know about this, that kind of thinking. But the Bible, we know, speaks over and over and over again about the resurrection. And a thinking person has to ask himself, okay, what does the resurrection then have to do with anything if there's a spirit floating around up there on the clouds playing the harp? Well, God deals in realities, and one reality is that people are one unity and that we are physical, our relationship to God depends on our mind and on our bodies, and that wonderful gift of life and connection with Him that God instilled at us at the time of creation.
You remind me of what Jesus said in John 14, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go, you're going to be up there in just a few short years joining me. No, if I go, I'm going to come back and receive you. Why am I going to come back and receive you? Because when you die, you're not coming to join me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It is amazing how that Christian thinking down through the years has been influenced, as you mentioned just a moment ago, with so much pagan thinking.
I prefer infected.
Infected is another good word. And I think that, you know, when we look at that, and I don't mean this to be in any way, I don't mean to chastise anyone by saying this, but I do think it says how easily we can be distracted from the Word of God off to human philosophy. And this is just one glaring case in point. And interestingly enough, this article has recognized the difference between the Old Testament thinking, the New Testament thinking, the early Christian thinking, and they have seen, they're not writing from a religious standpoint, but they certainly have seen how that this blending of paganism and Christianity took place.
And some of this blending, which led to these erroneous ideas about human consciousness, the human soul, this ethereal mystical, comes into decisions making that are in the news and in politics all the time. Decision making on stem cell research, on human cloning, on all these other things that people are so up in arms about has to go with their belief about human consciousness.
Right. Well, what are some more of the issues from the scientific standpoint that we have involved in the article here today that you'd like to raise?
Well, the big issue that I see is if I read my Bible and understand it, the principle that governs life is the principle of love, self-sacrificial giving, beneficial for the other. Christ summed up when he says, greater love is no man than to give his life for his friend, which is at war with the principle of survival of the fittest, which says, I'll kill you in order that I might live. And they have taken the approach that survival of the fittest is the basis for life, and it's really the principle of death.
More in just a minute. We'd love to hear from you, 800-775-4673. We'll be back. More about the soul and science, how these come together, and can we scientifically discover the human soul? 800-775-4673.
Has Steve made you think today? Tell us about it. 800-775-4673.
Can you put a price tag on confidence? Hello, this is Jeremy Woodruff, and my oldest daughter, Elizabeth, had a little bit of a struggle learning to ride a bicycle. She had a hand-me-down bike with a mismatched set of training wheels that would come loose, making for quite an unsteady ride. I knew she was close to not needing the training wheels at all, but she just couldn't seem to proceed without them until she could ride confidently with them. So I made a $12 investment in some new training wheels, and it wasn't but a matter of days before they weren't even needed anymore. And you know, seeing Ellie take off with a smile on her face was worth far more than $12. I'm reminded of a heavenly Father who was willing to make the ultimate investment to see his children thrive. To learn more about this God of love, call this toll-free number, 800-775-4673, and ask for the free Discover Bible Study lessons. Give your spiritual self-confidence a big boost. Call 800-775-HOPE and ask for Discover.
Steve Gallimore back with you. We are talking today about science and the human soul. Our number is 800-775-HOPE, and we have the Jamie George CD we'll be happy to send to you free of charge, and that's our gift of appreciation when you come and join us on the air. My guest today is Dr. Tim Jennings, a psychiatrist, author, seminar presenter, and consultant, and we are having a great time talking about the human soul. What is it, and what does science have to do with that? So give us a call quickly because we're running out of time, 800-775-4673. Another quotation in this article that you may find intriguing is simply this. It says that Plutonic thought did creep in, winning over such influential Christian theologians as Augustine and John Calvin. Now, some of you may not know who Augustine was. He was probably and probably is today still the most influential Christian theologian. He came from the very early centuries of Christianity, but has had a tremendous influence on Christianity in general. And John Calvin was one of the great reformers of the Protestant Reformation. It says that the new science of consciousness, this view of the new science of consciousness, by showing the inseparable link between the mind and body, restores the original conception of the unity of the person. As many Christian theologians now say, human beings do not have souls. They are souls. And that is exactly right. And that is a good analysis, because many Christian theologians today have moved away from the influence of paganism in Christianity. They move more back towards a biblical position. And so we have found a great change among many Christian theologians and pastors today.
That is absolutely right. And I would agree as a physician, as a psychiatrist, that we are an integrated being. We have biological side, to be sure. We have a spiritual side, but that spiritual side can't be separated from our biological side. You can't take the spirit away from the organ in which it functions, which is your brain.
Now, Tim, I raised something to you during the break, that when we talk about these things, it's easy to reduce everything to concrete terms. It seems to me, when we talk about what makes a person truly a person, that there is something that, and I used with you the word mysterious about it. We often talk about the mystery of iniquity. How sin could arise in God's perfect universe is a mystery, and I think will probably forever for us remain a mystery. The change that took place in at sin at the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve did not just do a no-no. It just wasn't something naughty they did that God was unwilling to overlook. There was a change in their very nature that took place at the time of sin. And I think there's something mysterious about about human beings, about sin, about our relationship with God, that we probably will never be able, even in eternity, to define in some kind of scientific analysis and quantify that in some way.
Well, I'm hoping that as time goes on and when we get to see Jesus face to face and speak to God one on one, that maybe some of those mysteries can be cleared up for us.
Right. That's true. And I think we will understand that better as time goes on. But when we go back to the Garden of Eden, of course, God did make Adam and Eve, and the Bible tells the story very clearly. It says that God took the dirt of the ground, and he made a clay model of Adam, and the Bible says that he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And Tim, I've often told people that, you know, you or I or any other human being in this world, we could have breathed all day long for a million years, you know, day after day, and it never would have given Adam life. We could have pumped into Adam's lungs the proper amount of oxygen and all those kinds of things. But Adam, even though everything was perfectly formed in him, never would have been a living entity. But God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. At that moment, Adam not only had the ability to live as some kind of mechanical organism that God had created, but Adam also had the ability to really be a living soul and to relate to God in a different way than the other parts of God's creation.
Yeah, he had the ability to appreciate God, to understand, to reason, and to love God. It's interesting also for some of your listeners, they may not realize, but that breath of life that he breathed into Adam was the same breath of life that he breathed in or he gave to all the animals. Remember, it says at the flood, all those who have breath in them will be destroyed at the flood, the
right.
Animals as well. And so that life energy isn't what separates us from the animals. That energy that gives life does come from God. But when he made Adam, he made him in a unique and different way from the rest of the creation, as you're saying, which was, I think, with the ability that he could actually enter to a certain degree into friendly conversation and comprehension and understanding and reasoning and love and admiration and appreciation for the person and being God is, which the animals were limited in their ability to do.
Well, now let's come back to the scientist for just a minute. Obviously, this is an area that scientific endeavor will continue to push into. What are some issues, do you think, in the future that they may stumble across as they continue to do the scientific research? And, you know, there is an evolutionary philosophy, and as they continue to analyze the DNA, there are a lot of things still about the genome and the DNA that we don't understand. What kind of possible things could they come up with in the future?
Well, I think they're going to finally figure out, with all their experiments, that gene mutations don't introduce new information.
All right.
You right. understand the significance
sure.
of that.
Right.
So, and for their...
Explain that, though.
For their theory to work, a lower life form to evolve to a higher life form has to have new information, new genetic information introduced in order for it to gain new abilities. But there is no scientific evidence. In fact, all the evidence shows that when a gene mutation happens, it's a loss or damage of the current information, and we have a degradation of genetic material, not an advancement of genetic material. So I think finally somebody's light might go on out there and say, wait a minute, what's happening in our observable world is evolution isn't happening.
Now, from that standpoint, let me ask you this. If scientists are looking for the genetic components that make a soul, and we know from this article that is an endeavor that's taking place, and they'd like to take that and implant that into a chimp, for instance, maybe they're looking at things in reverse, because the current philosophy has been to look at the chimp and to see how that became a human.
Right.
And we still find, you know, commonality between the two. But what you're saying is that really is an impossibility according to current scientific data.
That's exactly right. And they don't see it. It just shows you their presuppositions have so blinded them to the reality that's in front of them. And I'm reminded of Christ's words, seeing yet they do not see, hearing yet they do not hear.
Right. Well, and that is true, I think, of human nature. We often believe what we want to believe rather than what really either makes sense or what God has revealed to us that we should believe. Well, Dr. Jennings, it's been great having you with me today as we've talked about this. And as we mentioned earlier in the program, we could have gone so many different directions, and there are just 1,000 things we did not cover that we could have. But we had to stay somewhat focused, of course. But a great topic. And I think maybe we can talk about this again sometime.
Sounds great.
All right. Thanks for being with me today. We wish you God's blessing, and we hope everything continues to go well in your life. And we would encourage you, pick up the Bible, read it carefully, and understand the wonderful things that God